Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 263, being recorded on the 23rd of January, 2019, with special guest Liz Rice from Aqua Security.
Hi.
Hey, Liz. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, on Teams with me, I keep saying Skype, damn it, Teams are wild now. On Teams with me, I have the full crew, almost full crew. We have Evan, Kale, Cynthia, Kendall, and of course our special guest Liz. Unfortunately, Russell's in interviews all day today, so he couldn't join us, but we've got a good crowd here. So let's go ahead and get started with some of the updates in the Azure space. I think, Evan, did you put in some?
Let me jump into the first one, because this is actually one kind of touches some of my core interests and expertise. But there's a really, really good article. And I have to confess that I did not know this was out there until someone else pointed out to me, but there's a really, really good troubleshooting network performance article that got published. Now, it is focused on ExpressRoute, but a lot of this stuff is relevant to anything, really, you know, any connectivity between one machine and another. There's some PowerShell commandlets that you can run. There's some really good documentation about typical latencies. It's just a great article that if you're trying to troubleshoot a networking perf case, I definitely recommend people check out.
Since you're talking about networking, how does Network Watcher, does that figure in the tool set here?
It is certainly part of the set of tools that are out there. This particular one is more focused on looking at performance across connections. There's some tools out there like iPerf that are really good for this kind of stuff. But to be honest, what we run into, and again, I come out of the support world historically, but is that, and this is not unique to network troubleshooting, but the trick that makes troubleshooting consistent and useful is when you're running some test that you know will generate some result, and you can compare good versus bad, right? Hey, my typical performance across this kind of a connection is blah. Well, if I'm getting half a blah, then I know something's off, right? We find a lot of people will just not run the right test, or they don't know what a good value is. Or they just don't know how to even measure anything. And they'll come in and say, well, my app is slow, so therefore it must be network, right? And this article is really kind of targeted at, hey, if you were just doing network troubleshooting, you wanted to gauge the performance of your network, and then based on that performance, kind of draw some conclusions about what might be going on. This is a great article for that kind of perspective.
Good, good, very good. I know you also put in something on SQLDB, I think, in there.
This is one of these things that this kind of stuff happens all the time under the covers. We're always upgrading and improving things. This one's a little bit different in the sense of we're kind of reworking the way that we're doing Azure SQLDB metrics at the infrastructure level. What that does mean is that some of the old data that you can't that came in before December 21st, you're going to have to change how you go get it. But going forward, right, the intent is, yes, this is a breaking change and there is some downside to it, but long term, this will really allow us to do the long term improvements and performance that we want to make sure that we can continue to improve the alerting story around Azure SQLDB.
Excellent. Great. Thanks. Kendall, I saw you put a couple in there. You want to talk about it?
Yeah. So as of Monday, they announced that there's a public preview for read replicas in Azure Database for PostgreSQL. And essentially what this is going to mean is that you can have up to 5 read-only servers that are replicated based on your kind of master database server in the same Azure region. So a good use case for this would be, if you had read-intensive operations or wanted to use some of these read-only replicas for things like monitoring and reporting. So thought that was just kind of a neat thing to be aware of.
Yep, indeed. Thank you. And Cynthia, I think you put something in there.
Yeah, so something I just found out is that Azure Backup is now supporting PowerShell and ACL for Azure Files. I know a while ago we had a PM come on and talk about Azure File Sync, and now the Azure team is revealing a new feature for backing up Azure File Shares natively using Azure Backup. So now all the backup-related features also support file shares connected to Azure File Sync. And now you're able to preserve and restore NTFS, also the access control list. So what that means is that Azure Backup actually captures your file ACLs when they're backing up your file shares. So when you want to restore them, the ACLs are also restored.
Wow. That's good. I do recall now the PM, she mentioned this was coming soon. So
I think she was hinting. I think she was hinting that it was coming.
With Azure Backup now, they're now probably a lot more compatible than they used to be. You can use PowerShell commands to configure those backups, take on-demand backups, or restore files up to 10 years. And in the link, there's also an email that you can write to if you're looking for some sample scripts from the Azure Backup team.
Excellent. Thank you. And Kate, I see your Node-RED thing is there again. I think you've mentioned this before, but what's this one all about?
Yeah, no, it's a pretty nice little walkthrough for folks who are interested in IoT specifically. Node-RED's, as we mentioned before, is a kind of a flow-based workflow tool that's I think it's an open source project that basically allows you to design these flows for, you know, how data would flow from, in this case, a temperature and humidity sensor. And this is showcasing something using like Raspberry Pi. So it kind of walks through the whole flow of how you would configure IoT Central, how, you know, you could then use Node-RED to kind of take the sensor input data and design a flow for it. So it's a pretty nice little walkthrough for the IoT geeks out there, and pretty interesting. So thought it was cool.
Great. Well, I have, being in my app dev hat, I have one update. .NET Core 2.2 is something, is the latest version of that framework, and they've made that available in app services. So you could, on the Windows platform, that is, they haven't put it on the app services for Linux yet. But on app services for Windows, you can now spin up an application that takes advantage of that framework. So go check that out. Well, I think that's a good rundown on all the news. Thank you for all the updates. So let's turn the mic over to our special guest today, Liz Rice. Liz, please go ahead. I mean, I'm sure you need no introduction, but go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners so they know, you know, who you work for and kind of what your passion is, et cetera, and in the cloud space or in computing in general.
Yeah, sure. So my name's Liz Rice. I work with Aqua Security. I'm a technology evangelist with them. And for the last few years, I have been doing a lot with containers and container security. I also kind of last year was the co-chair for the program committee for KubeCon and Cloud Native Con. So I've been quite involved in at least a sort of high-level overview of what's been going on in the Kubernetes community and the kind of cloud-native tool set that we have out there. So, yeah, containers, security, Kubernetes, that's pretty much where I'm most likely to be found these days.
Yeah, I was at KubeCon, by the way, in Seattle, and it was great to hear you, you know, talk on stage and all. You really got the crowd going, so great job there.
<you. laughs> Try to keep the energy levels going, you know.
Yes, for sure. you know, I know you focus a lot on security, and we'll talk about some of the work that you've done with some of your open source projects and the books that you've written. But I just want to see, like, you know, how did you settle in on this particular topic of security? How did you get here, and why do you think that's important?
Yeah, so I had been working with container technology for a while. Before I joined Aqua, I was a co-founder of a startup that, you know, went the way of many startups. And I knew, you know, as that journey came to an end, I knew that containers was an area of technology I was really, really enjoying, and that the community around it was terrific. But at that point, I didn't really know very much about security. But I met Draw, the CEO of Aqua, just by a fortuitous introduction. And we got on really, really well. And I think that was a Friday. The following Tuesday, I was in Tel Aviv meeting Amir, the CTO, and seeing the product that Aqua already had at that point. And it was fascinating, to see how the thing that completely grabbed my attention was how Aqua's sort of runtime security works, where you can have a container and you have a learned profile of what normal behavior looks like for that container. So things like what executables it can run and what network traffic it can initiate and what user IDs it can run as. And Aqua can kind of police, making sure that you're only doing that expected activity within a container. And basically when I saw it, I thought, this is really powerful. And I can see why that's useful technology for businesses who are adopting containers. And the team were great as well. So that was really the beginning of my security journey. And over the last couple of years, that's pretty much what I've been immersed in, and sort of seeing how that technology fits into the broader space of Kubernetes, because Kubernetes runs containers, but it has lots of other interesting sort of security related aspects to it. So things like role-based access control or network policy, and seeing how those open source things fit together alongside some of the commercial things that we're doing, the proprietary things that we're doing at Aqua, and building some of our own open source tools as well. So it's a really, really interesting space with a lot going on.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is, I always find these conversations to be interesting, Liz, because, and your keynote, I think, is a good point of this, in the sense of open source doesn't mean safe, right? Mm. There's certainly a group of folks that say, hey, if it's open source, I can see what it's doing, so therefore it may be safe, but sort of, right? In the real world, right, there are definitely bad actors that live everywhere, open source and non-open source. And when people add in Kubernetes and they add in containers, right, there's all these other layers that traditional kind of security model and traditional tools don't work, right? So there's got to be a whole nother layer of tools and capabilities that people have had to build. And it sounds like you've spent a lot of time kind of thinking about that kind of stuff as well as working there.
Yeah. And one thing that is very striking when you compare that kind of traditional security landscape and a container security landscape. In the olden days, you used to have...
Yeah, like 2 years ago. Right?
Yeah, like 2 years ago, yeah. But you used to have like a handful of servers, and you'd go in and you would patch those servers manually. And now you've got, potentially thousands of instances of containers running. And every one of those containers could have a whole distribution of Linux inside it. And they could all be different. You can't manually keep on top of the state of what's running inside all those different containers. So it requires additional tooling. It requires additional best practices. So things like treating those containers as immutable so that you don't go in and manually change them and then lose all track of what, you can't be applying patches in that kind of manual way anymore. You have to have automated tools to do it for you. So it's technology, and it's also a change of mindset and a change of process, and fits into this whole move where people are going from traditional environments to DevOps environments and shipping code however many times a day, and having security built into that. You can't have security being something that you just sort of apply at the end of a development process anymore. It has to be something you think about through the whole software development lifecycle, through the whole CI/CD process.
Yeah, I saw a conversation somebody was having the other day where they were basically saying, hey, the future of security is pushing it to, whether you call it left or right, doesn't matter, but pushing it towards the developer side, right? Pushing it towards the DevOps side, rather than saying, hey, the developer just writes the code and maybe pushes it to production, and then now some other team is responsible for making sure that is secure. Now push it all back to the developers, and to your point, automation and part of your CI/CD pipeline, just so it's just there.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, it's exactly right. And a question that comes up quite a lot in that context of, well, if you're pushing security all the way back to the developer, well, A, how do developers know about security? And B, how do the security people fit into this new world? And that's where we come back to the question of cultural change and the question of acting as a team. You know, the developers and the security people need to be working together and having conversations much earlier in the life cycle about, okay, what are the packages that we are going to depend on, and how are we going to, for example, we might have some base container images for each of our languages, and here's the base image we're going to have for Node, and here's the base images we're going to have for Python, but what are the contents of those base images? And security and development need to agree their own sort of respective concerns about what levels of software they want to see in those base images. It's just like an example of the kind of cultural thing that has to happen as people move into this new world.
You know, Liz, that's really interesting. This is Kendall speaking. I think just as someone that's, really kind of jumping into the container space myself right now, it really is interesting to see how when you have conversations with customers, it's not just a conversation about what is containers. It's a conversation about how they view DevOps. It's a conversation about how everyone in their organization is viewing their role. And so there's so many different transformations that have to happen in order to empower this new secure process. So, all of this is just really putting a lot in perspective for me. But I kind of wanted to ask you a question that's more related to the Azure side of things. So I know that at Aqua, you have some offerings for Windows containers and obviously things around the Kubernetes side of things. So I just wanted to know, because Microsoft is kind of shifting our focus on into our AKS offering versus our container offering, which will be deprecated, I believe, next year. Did that kind of have to change also the offering that y'all provided to that? I just kind of wanted to know what that relationship looked like, or how that evolution happens for y'all at Aqua when changes happen at the, the sure. customers that you're supporting.
Yeah. So Aqua's solutions started off very much agnostic to whatever the orchestration layer was. So, we'd work with Docker, we'd work with Kubernetes, we'd work with Rancher, whatever the sort of platform layer was, we were hooking it, or we do hook in at the container level, at the point where you have a runtime that starts a container. That's where the Aqua technology really gets involved fundamentally. So in some ways it's not been a huge change, but what we have been doing over the last I guess year to 18 months, since it's been clear that Kubernetes is really, the direction that everybody has moved in, making the integration between our tooling and the Kubernetes, the naming that things get, the way that people perceive. So, for example, in Kubernetes, you don't really see individual containers. You are more likely to be exposed to them as a pod, and the pod contains containers. And that's been one of the things that we've been evolving in our product as it kind of matures, and as people move increasingly in the Kubernetes direction. Well, we want to show things in an increasingly cloud native way, in a way that matches what they're seeing in their the kind of other bits of cloud native tooling. So it has required some work for us, but mostly it's been more about how you integrate at the kind of the management side, rather than at the deep technological level of how we secure the container. So in some ways that's been relatively easy. Then again, there are also tricksy little things like how various different little network features that have had impact on us, like whether we're using IP tables or IPvS or all these other kind of nitty gritty bits of networking detail that have provided a few challenges for us.
Yeah. Just one thing, I was looking at your stuff earlier and I saw that you guys are actually on the Azure Marketplace. So maybe you could talk a little bit about, some of our listeners who, use Azure every day, like this container security platform offering that you guys have there. What's that entail? Like what's involved there? Is it basically like I can have some of these like instances running in my subscription? I just fire up this product and I can start to manage them, or how does this work?
Right. So the container security platform that Aqua provides really covers the whole life cycle of containers. And where people usually kind of their first requirement is usually at the stage where they want to scan their images for known vulnerabilities. So you have some container images that you've built. You're storing those images in a registry, in the Azure container registry in this example. You want to know whether or not they contain any significant vulnerabilities that you need to be aware of. And if they do, you're going to have to rebuild your images with updated packages that don't have these vulnerabilities. I feel like I should even step back and say vulnerabilities are these known problems, things like shell shock and Heartbleed and these exploits that we hear of. They're basically versions of software that are known. It's known that hackers can exploit them. So you need to know that you don't have those versions inside any of the packages inside any of your container images. And so that's the kind of first stage of container security and the sort of typically what people first want to see from their container security solution. But then it becomes from there we can expand out into things like secrets management. So having an easy way to inject your secrets, maybe from you'll forgive me, I can't quite remember, is an Azure key management
key vault.
Yeah, okay. So integrating, getting secrets from that into the right containers at the right time. And then the runtime protection that I talked about, where we can learn the behavior, the expected behavior of a container and alert you or prevent unexpected behavior from happening. And you'll see all of that in basically a console that Aqua provides that gives you visibility into what container images you have, what vulnerabilities exist inside those images, whether they've been scanned. Controls over the policies that you might have around what images can be deployed into your AKS cluster. So you might say it is not permitted to run images unless they're based on certain set of base images. Or you might say, I am not going to allow any image to be deployed if it has a vulnerability over a certain severity score. There's lots of kind of complicated and customizable rules that you can set up. And then also getting visibility into the actual containers that are running and full audit logging. And auditing is a big part of the security story because you need to have a kind of permanent or unmodifiable trail of what's happened so that if bad guys get in, it's hard for them to cover their tracks. So that's another part of the puzzle that Aqua is providing audit logging for all these security-related events and things like when a secret got accessed, who accessed it, and which containers did it go to.
It looks like there is integration with Microsoft OMS. Is that correct? So you could actually use Operations Management Suite in the cloud in order to visualize some of these vulnerabilities and things of that nature?
I'm going to have to confess, I'm not really expert in how that looks. I would imagine there is integration there because I know we have quite a few integration points with Microsoft, but and with the Azure platform. But I'm going to have to confess, I don't know how that looks.
No problem. Awesome. I think there is that. So for those of our listeners who are using OMS already, I think you can visualize this data there, and we'll confirm and send out a link on that if that is true.
Right. You know, Liz, go ahead, Cynthia.
Oh, thanks, Sujeet. So Liz, I wanted to circle back to the DevOps portion because this is really a new idea for me of thinking about security while you're doing DevOps. Could you elaborate a little bit on what that looks like? And for people that are working a lot on automation or CI/CD, how do you start thinking about security?
Yeah, and it is something that can sound quite scary, I think. You know, before I got involved in security, I thought, well, that's something that involves a lot of buzzwords and a lot of acronyms, and I don't really know what a lot of these things are. And actually, when you look into it, a lot of the things that you need to do from a security standpoint, it can be a never-ending journey. There's always something else you can do to make things more secure. But there are some pretty straightforward things that you can do quite easily to dramatically improve the security of your system. So one of the examples that I quite often use if I'm talking about, how can you introduce security into your CI/CD pipeline is this idea of vulnerability scanning. Because the number one way that systems get attacked is through these known vulnerabilities. It's essentially that people are running old versions of software with known flaws that can be exploited. So if you can prevent your system from having that kind of vulnerable software from running, that is probably the best, if you only do one thing, that's probably the most effective thing that you can do to protect your deployment. And there are some easy ways you can do that. You can use a commercial platform like Aqua's and have it plug in very nicely into your whole CI/CD pipeline. Or you can test the waters if you want by using things like, we have a product called Microscanner, which is, it's actually using the same package vulnerability system that we use in the commercial product, but you can, you sort of invoke it by putting a command into your Docker file so that as an image gets built, it gets scanned as well. And that's a really good way of just testing the water of what does this image scanning mean to you and what are you going to do when you get these results, and are there some, really basic things that you need to clean up straight away to improve your security posture? Because a lot of these security tools will give you clear information that you don't have to be a security expert to understand. A high severity vulnerability, that sounds bad. I probably need to do something about that.
So would you say a lot of them would be starting with keeping up the quality of the software, or like setting up like quality gates as a start for DevOps?
Yeah, if you like. Yeah, quality in terms of this known vulnerabilities in your dependencies. Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, another thing that's actually a really good practice for people to do at the development stage is using things like static analysis tools that they can check for things like, have you got a SQL injection? Is it possible for somebody to send a SQL injection command to sort of abuse your database? And static analysis tools can, you just run them over your code and they can reveal things that you can improve in the lines of code that your developers are writing. And you can learn from that. You can see what a static analysis tool tells you is bad practice, and that helps you write more secure code going forward. I think that's another example of where if you give the results of these tools to the developers, they can learn and they can improve their practices, they can improve the security of the code they write without having to go away and, study to become a security expert. They can use the tools and get the results and improve things immediately.
Now, Liz, I wanted to quickly ask you about in the book that you wrote with Michael. I know I have a worn-out copy of it. I've read it a few times already, I think. And it covers, all aspects of Kubernetes, at least from a security perspective. But what I wanted to ask you is, when with everybody moving towards managed Kubernetes services from the cloud vendors like AKS, GKE, I forget what the Amazon one is called, but
EKS, yeah.
EKS, yeah. So thank you. So, when you have that in place, right, what are the kind of, some of the security is already handled by the cloud provider. What's left for, for the corporations to kind of at a high level, what should, you know, what's still there that they should worry about?
Yeah. So the managed service is probably going to do a decent job of setting up your Kubernetes cluster with good defaults. So for example, you can set up Kubernetes with some really bad settings that allow, you know, anybody in the internet to come and issue a command that runs software in your cluster. This is obviously a bad thing. There have been known and reported cases of this. There was a well-published case where Tesla exposed their Kubernetes dashboard effectively to the internet. I would expect that all the managed services will, you know, not do that. That would be, you know, I think that it would be safe to rely on your managed service not doing basic things like that, not getting those kind of things wrong. But the kind
No Tesla car for Liz now.
Right.
Sorry if you were on that waiting list. You're no longer there.
Yeah, I just got bumped. Oh. but the kind of thing that the managed services can't really do for you is anything related to the application software that you are deploying within it, within that cluster. So this is where we're looking at things like the dependencies, vulnerabilities inside your images, so that kind of whole image scanning thing, and the runtime security, so keeping your application code doing what it's supposed to do. A lot of this is about layers of security, right? So it might be very hard for an attacker to get into your cluster. And you would hope that was the case if it was a managed cluster. It might well be running kind of automatically within within some kind of firewalled environment, or it'd be very easy to run it in a firewalled environment in these managed services. But nevertheless, perhaps there's some kind of vulnerability or some kind of human error that allows an attacker to get a foothold inside that cluster. And the kind of things that you can do with runtime security to detect anomalous behavior. So see that your really great example, suppose you have an e-commerce website and it's built out of microservices. And let's say you've got a product search microservice and it's going to make requests to your product database to get information about products. But if you saw that container trying to access the broader internet or maybe run commands to query other network connections around that container or anything to do with use, there are loads of things that you could say that really isn't what you expect a product search microservice to do. And you can only really detect this stuff at runtime, and it's the sort of thing that's it's specific to your service, right? The tooling has to learn the behavior of each of your bits of application code. But once you've got that in place, it's super powerful, because if you can spot these unexpected behaviors and either alert on them or prevent them, that's you've prevented the attacker from doing anything useful, even though they managed to get inside your cluster. So it's layers and layers of security. Not everybody, you know, you're running a blog, personal blog, you don't need all these layers of security. But if you're a bank or a hospital or somebody with important data to protect, these are the kind of additional layers you might well want to think about investing in.
Good point. Yeah. Now, I know we've kind of been on this for quite a while, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I do want to ask you about the two open source projects that you've been working on and how, you know, the KubeHunter and the MicroScanner and how they can be used in a managed, you know, Kubernetes environment. Like, can you just quickly talk about that, please?
Yeah, so KubeHunter is essentially penetration testing for Kubernetes, and penetration testing is where you try to attack a deployment. You try to do what a hacker would do and see what's possible. So KubeHunter tries to open connections to the various different API access points, if you like, within a Kubernetes cluster, and it tries to run commands, and it will report back to you if it finds things that it can do and perhaps shouldn't be able to do. And you can also run it inside a pod, inside your cluster. And that gives you an idea what an attacker could do if they manage to compromise one pod in your cluster.
That's useful to know. That's good. Yeah. You can run, you could run it from inside as well. That's
cool. Yeah. So you can use this to kind of check the security of your cluster. If it's a managed service, you know, whether it's managed or your own on-prem solution, you can use this to assess whether there's anything you need to be worried about, any security holes you need to close down. And the fact that it's open source means you can look at exactly what tests it's running. We are more than happy to get ideas and even pull requests for more, what we call hunters, to do more tests, because the creativity of hackers knows no bounds, but neither does the creativity of the open source community know bounds. Come and help us build the best penetration testing system for Kubernetes.
Awesome. And what about Microscanner? How does that fit into the overall security landscape?
Yeah, so Microscanner is it's actually what I was referring to earlier when I was saying it's a free version of the commercial vulnerability scanner that we have.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay, good. So people can try Microscanner, they like what they see, and they need more robust solution, then they can kind of move up to the more commercial offering.
Exactly. So the commercial offering gives you a more integrated solution, but Microscanner does use exactly the same database of vulnerabilities. So you're getting quite a lot of the important parts of the commercial functionality.
Okay, great. Oh, that's really, really useful information. Thank you so much. Guys, any more questions for Liz before we let her go?
No, that was great. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks so much. And if you have, you know, any links, we'll put the links that you already shared with us. But if there's any other resources that you think our listeners would like to have along with this episode, just send them to me and we'll attach them to the posting on the website.
Great. Will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.